Okay, everybody. I would like to start off by welcoming Mike Westerdahl here, Critical Bench, to talk today about bench pressing and his new his updated Critical Bench program. It's been 10 years out, so it's not necessarily new. But Mike's been kind enough to join us today for a call on basically on how to bench and what his program is all about and how it can help you increase your bench and your overall body weight and strength. He's got some really good information to get through here, and let's get right into it. Mike, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, like how long you've been training, you know, what your background is, how you got started in training, credit card numbers, that kind of thing.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Nick.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm 34 now. I started training around 15 or 16 in my basement. I think a lot of people started off the same way, just like one of those weeder benches and working out in your basement. That's how I started off, working out at the YMCA, reading all the muscle magazines, overtraining like crazy when I was a teenager, just working out like full body workouts every single day of the week. And, you know, when you first start off, everything kind of works for you. But I was still pretty puny. If you check out the website, I was like 160 pounds in high school, you know, 6 feet tall. So didn't exactly have great genetics, but I did play football. That was one of the major reasons I was lifting weights, just to get bigger and hold my own on the field. And I really hit a growth spurt in college. I got some tips. I was a walk-on for Division I AA team in Connecticut, Central Connecticut, and I put on a ton of muscle mass during college. And by my junior and senior year, I was a starting outside linebacker, up to 230 pounds by my senior year.
Nice.
Post-college, you know, I really got interested, got certified as a personal trainer. I actually went over to Europe to play football for a little bit, did some coaching and some playing over there till I tore my ACL, came back and worked for many years as a personal trainer in different commercial health clubs. Then I started the Critical Bench website. A lot of people always wondering how that came about, how long I've had it. That was actually a school project, just how to start a website. And I've always loved the bench press and been fascinated with it. So that's what I started the website with back in 1999 when I was finishing up college. And I just realized I could reach so many more people and help so many more people doing this online. So eventually I made the move, and I moved down to Florida and been working on the website and the online business ever since. Now I live in Clearwater, Florida with my wife, Courtney, and compete in powerlifting. And that's about where I'm at right now.
Excellent. Yeah, I was always curious about that Critical Bench site, because you've had that site for a long time. You started even before I did in this online thing, and I think I started in 2000, and so you got a full year on me there, man.
Yeah, just barely.
Yeah, so that's awesome. I know everybody who is on this call is going to be wondering, what is your personal record in the bench press?
My best gym lift is a 452-pound bench. That's the best I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I've tested reps, too. I've done 405 for five, and then 315, my best was 15 reps. But then in competition, I compete with powerlifting gear, which not a lot of people are interested in that, but that's something, there's different equipment you can use. It helps you lift more weight, but it takes a lot of practice and technique to train with the gear. And the most I've done in competition with a bench shirt is 630 pounds.
Dang, that's awesome. Yeah, the bench shirt does kind of help you with that, but... Yeah, the gym lift at 452, that's, you know, if anybody here has ever been underneath that much weight, then you know exactly how much that is. It's a pretty good weight. What am I going to say here? Oh, yeah. I think the bench press is one of the exercises that you see most people, just about everybody in the gym doing, yet I think it's one of the most, you know, mistake-prone exercises I've ever seen in the gym, too. What are the three biggest mistakes you see people making with bench press?
Yeah, good question. I mean, Monday nights are just packed in the gym. Everybody's fighting over the different benches. I mean, it's a really popular exercise. I mean, it's pretty much like a badge of honor, bragging rights. If you work out and you just go somewhere, people always ask you, oh, how much do you bench? They don't say, like, how much can you do on lat pull downs or, you know, let me see your quad muscle. Like, they're always asking,
exactly.
How much do you bench? Like, I don't know if that's the best question, but that seems to always come up. But, yeah, as far as mistakes, you've got to go back to the actual technique, because everybody wants to know the program. They want to know the routines, reps, sets, exercises. But all that stuff doesn't really matter if you've got the whole setup and technique and the foundation of the lift wrong. So I'm going to cover a couple of mistakes on that at first. And this is just, you know, I trained a lot of years at commercial gyms. Now I train at a barbell club. The only people that lift there are power lifters. And I also train at a warehouse gym owned by a professional strongman. So I don't see as many of, you know, regular guys that aren't competing. But I do remember seeing these mistakes almost every single time I go to the gym. And the number one is going to have to be benching with your elbows flared out to the sides. And the reason that's a mistake is it just puts so much pressure on your shoulder girdle and on your shoulders. There's a lot of guys, you ask them how much they bench press, and their answer is, I don't do it anymore, it hurts my shoulders. Seems like the older you get, the more aches and injuries, and a lot of people just quit bench pressing because they get shoulder pain from it. So by correcting this and tucking the elbow into your sides, you're going to touch the bar a little bit lower on your chest. But what you do is you grip the bar the same way, but then you tuck your elbows into the side. Now when you lower the bar, it's going to touch a little lower below your nipples. And that's going to take the pressure off your shoulders. It's going to keep it on your chest. And as you're pushing up, it transfers to the triceps. So that's a huge mistake. Just flared elbows, it just puts wear and tear on your chest. If you're going to use that technique, it's a good bodybuilding technique, but it's not something you want to be going heavy with or trying to get stronger with.
Yeah, I can actually tell you from experience that I've noticed that with myself, too. When I first started training, I would do the flared elbow technique, and I'd get just pain in my shoulders constantly. But when I switched and kind of brought and read about bringing the elbows kind of in, tucked them in, like you were saying, it cleared up the shoulder pain pretty quickly.
Yeah, great. I was stuck at a 400-pound bench for a long time, and it was just killing my shoulders. I couldn't get past it. Mm-hmm. And then just with that technique, immediately you might drop a little bit of weight just for a couple of weeks just because it's a new form for you, but then you shoot right past where you were. So definitely don't be discouraged to try it because, you know, this is a little bit of an ego lift, but put the ego aside. You know, just make that small change, and in a couple of weeks you'll be right past where you were before. Yeah, you wanted three, so the
yeah,
next
give me three,
thing,
man.
All right, I got more. I got a lot, but I'll keep it to three.
Top three.
I got the dog trying to bust in the room right now, but I got him locked out. All right, so wrong breathing. You know, typically with most exercises, you take, you know, a good breath and you exhale as you're pushing or exerting yourself. That's not what you want to do when you're lifting heavy weight. You need to stabilize your body. So picture this on the bench press. You take one big breath as the bar gets unracked. Hopefully you have someone handing it off for you just to conserve energy. But as they hand it off for you, you take a breath. Now, if you want to stabilize it for a second before the lift starts, take one more breath, and you're going to hold your breath the entire movement. So you bring it all the way down to your chest, pause it, and then explode up. Now at the top of the lift, when you're locked out, now you can breathe out. If you've got another rep to do, now you take your next breath. Now, the reason for doing this is just because it keeps your body tight. Picture how tight and compact and stable your body gets when you're holding your air like that. I mean, it's like a stability ball just letting air out if you're, like, breathing out as you're pressing up. I mean, that's good for, you know, just regular working out, but that's not going to be good for power training or for trying to get stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, obviously this is more, you know, going to hold your breath for a 10-rep set. But like you said, that's more of a for a maximum kind of powerlifting kind of low-rep
right.
effort.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it between – there's nothing wrong with doing that between each rep, too. Take a new breath after each rep, but hold your breath during the rep.
Yeah, I know. That trunk stability just absolutely critical to have a base to push from because, you know, it's kind of like if you're on an air mattress and you let the air out of the air mattress while you're on it, you kind of sink down, everything squishes, and you don't want to get squished under heavy weight. You want to have a solid base of support to push from. Yeah, good tip.
Yeah.
Sure.
You got it. So there's a lot of technique tips. We'll probably go over some more in a little bit, but as far as a training tip, let's say somebody's got the form down pat and they're just looking for another tip. I made huge increase in my bench when I started dropping the rep range. If you're doing 8 reps, 10 reps right now, you know, that's going to get you good at doing 8 reps and 10 reps. Drop the reps down, get used to handling some heavier weights because it's not just your muscles that have to do this kind of lifting. You have to get your nervous system, your bones have to get used to the weight, your tendons and ligaments have to get stronger. So drop the reps to a lower rep range, even 3 reps for a set. Just get your body used to handling heavier weight. That way when you go to max out for a 1 rep max, your body's going to be used to this. If you're always doing 8 to 10 reps and then you all of a sudden max out, it's a completely different kind of training, and you're not going to get the kind of carryover that you're looking for. So that would be my third tip.
Excellent. Yeah. No, that's, I was just going to ask you about that when you were talking about the maxing out there, too. It's like if you suddenly go from what you've been practicing, which is 8 to 10 rep sets, and all of a sudden you're going to 1 and 2 rep sets, that's where you get injured. And that's what a lot of people run into, is they never do any heavy training. They never do any max or low rep sets. And all of a sudden they throw in a max, and then, oh, yeah, maxes are dangerous because they cause injury. Oh, no, they don't. It's just that you've never done them even close to that. So, you know, definitely an excellent tip there. Any other really big mistakes you see people making?
Yeah, I mean, another one, just people's attitude. This is kind of, I don't want to get all, you know, new age or anything like that, but have some confidence in what you're doing and don't, you know, think you're going to fail before you even try. I have so many people come and ask you for a spot, and they're like, you know, I'm gonna try this. I don't think I'm going to get it, or I don't know if I'm going to get it. And I'm just like, you're setting yourself up already thinking you're not going to get this. I'd rather you don't say anything. Don't even pick your reps. It's so weird how the mind works. Like, I've gone and told somebody before, I'm going to do 6 reps. I get 6 reps. But another time, I don't say anything. They say, how many are you going for? And I'm like, I'm not sure. We'll see. And all of a sudden, you crank out like 2 more than you would have. So just fake some confidence. Have a positive attitude. Don't make excuses before you even start. That's a big tip. But hopefully, most people that are serious about lifting already have the right attitude going in. The elbows tip is huge. The breathing, the rep ranges. Overtraining the bench, too. It seems like the more we want to improve on something or get better at something, you can just pound it to the ground until you're overtraining. Like, you don't need to be bench pressing every time you go work out or 2 or 3 times a week. You know, it's just too often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge one. I see a lot of people making that mistake. People ask me to critique their programs, and it's like benching 3 times a week. And, you know, that's the same movement pattern. It just grinds you down, and your nervous system can't take it.
Yeah, for sure. Also, you check out people's hands. Just like keeping your body tight, you want to activate your entire body in this. We'll go over some of the setup technique later on, but it is a full body lift. I mean, you're using every muscle in your body, including your legs, when you do the bench press. So you need to be gripping that bar extremely tight. So you check out some people's hands, and they have, like, open hands and their thumb on the wrong side of the bar. It's like the bar is just lying there on their hands, and they're not even squeezing it. Just squeeze that bar as hard as you can and act like you're pulling the bar apart. And the harder you squeeze that bar, the tighter and more muscle motor units you can recruit for the movement.
Absolutely.
It's just like I tell people an example, just like making a bicep muscle. Let's say you try to make a bicep peak, but you don't squeeze your forearm or make a fist or do anything like that, you can still make a bicep without, you know, making a fist or squeezing your forearm. But now do that exact same muscle contraction, squeezing your hand and your forearm as hard as you can. That bicep's going to squeeze even harder. You're recruiting more motor units. And the same thing with the bench. You want to get every muscle involved that you can, not just focus it in on just your chest or just your triceps.
Yeah, absolutely, and we'll definitely be getting into that. The bench is not necessarily just an upper body movement here, too, and there's definitely more we're going to talk about with that. Just kind of as an aside here, I got to ask you this, and it might be a little naughty of me here, but what's the funniest thing you've ever seen someone do on a bench?
Most of the funny stuff is actually, like, not funny as a person it happens to, but...
those are the funniest things, aren't they?
Yeah, it's like when you see somebody fall down and get hurt, and you can't help but laugh sometimes, but you know you shouldn't be laughing. But
yep.
This might actually be something that happened to me. It was really embarrassing. It was in college, actually. I went down to a local powerhouse gym in Connecticut, and I was around a 400-pound bencher at that time, and I had a pretty good workout going. I was by myself. I did a bunch of sets with 315 and got a really good workout. And then I dropped the weight down. I just wanted to get some burnout sets at the end just to get my pump going on and stuff. I didn't have a handoff person or a spotter with me. It was kind of a quiet night at the gym. And I dropped the weight down to maybe like 185 or something like that. And I don't know what happened. My muscles were just totally fatigued. And the bar was just stuck on my chest. And I had the collars on, so I couldn't dump the weight or do anything, and I had to, like, yell for somebody to come over. This, like, 14-year-old kid comes over, has to lift the bar off me, then tells me I shouldn't try lifting that much weight without a spotter, and I'm just like, I'm like, yeah, you're right. What could I say?
Man, yeah. Luckily,
that's just, I mean, thank goodness he was there, but yeah. At the same time, if it was a crowded night, maybe I would have been sitting there under the bar for so long.
Man, that's just... That's really kind of funny and scary at the same time. It's like, yeah, you know, 185 when you're benching 400 doesn't seem like that much, but when you're trashed, you're trashed.
Right.
And to have the kid come up and give you a comeuppance.
Yeah, and then he starts giving me advice, and I'm like, you know what? I got to listen.
Yeah, take your own advice. It's the hardest thing sometimes. Cool. That I have to say, that's pretty darn funny. Let's get to back to proper form here, because that's, like you said, form is just huge when it comes to bench pressing. And if you don't have proper form, it doesn't matter what kind of program you're using or how many sets or how good you're eating or anything like that. If your form sucks, your whole lift is off. Can you give us like a step-by-step guide to proper form on just like a normal bench press, all the way from looking at the bar to sitting down to getting underneath the bar, pretty much a rundown of the whole process?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a little different for each person, but there's some basic fundamentals just to incorporate. But basically, you got to find what's comfortable for you. But what you're trying to do is get a nice arch set up and a nice stable base. And here's some tips just to get set up. So one of the first things you want to do is squeeze your shoulder blades together. And what that does is it shortens the distance that the bar has to travel. Or if you squeeze your shoulder blades together and keep that tight back on the bench, that takes like 2-3 inches off the lift. So when your arms are totally locked out and you were to overextend or press them forward, it adds like 3 inches to the lift. But if you keep your shoulder blades back, it makes you more stable. It keeps you more stable on the bench, and it shortens the distance the bar has to go. So that's one technique. Another one is getting your eyes completely level underneath the bar. Where you grip the bar, you want to gradually start going wider and wider and wider on the bar, but it's going to take a little bit of time to move out. You don't want to move out, you know, too much at once. I usually move out when I first started. I tried to get out to holding the rings with my pointer finger. That's where I'm at now, and that's as wide as you can legally go in competition anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's where I stopped. But I think when I first started, like, my pinkies were on the rings, and it was more of a tricep movement.
Yeah.
So you want to hold it as wide as you can. Maybe take a couple of weeks to move out each finger just so you don't make too big of a jump. That's another one that shortens the distance the bar goes to. The wider you hold it, the less distance the bar is going to travel, which is going to help you move more weight. Another thing you want to do is get your feet tucked in underneath you so that you get an arch under your lower back. The parts of your body that are going to be in contact with the bench, you want your feet on the floor. It can be either your toes or your heels. It doesn't matter, but you want them nice and tucked in, kind of like almost if you can get them there underneath where your glutes are. I can't get mine that far back, but some people can. Then you want your glutes touching the bench, but then there should be a nice little arch there by your lower back. Someone should be able to like put their arm right under there, no problem. Then you've got the shoulder blades squeezed together and touching the bench. Those are your main contact points. And it's tough. If you're not flexible or you have tight hip flexors or quads or just lower back stiffness, you can start practicing that arch by putting a foam roller underneath your lower back while you're benching, and that'll just help you get used to it. And then later on you can move up to bigger pieces of like PVC pipe or something like that. Those are some tips. There's actually an entire video that comes with the program. I think it's like a 50-minute video. I got a bunch of pro powerlifters and myself included that just go over step-by-step exactly how to do it. You know, these are all setup techniques, but then for the lift itself, we talked about some of the breathing and staying tight. As you lower the weight, you want your forearms to be perpendicular. You want them to be straight up and down. So if you've got the elbows tucked in and you're lowering the weight, that's going to touch lower than your nipples to keep your forearms straight up and down, because that's how you're going to transfer the most power. And then as you press up, you want to push with your feet too, and you're digging your back into the bench, and you're using almost every single muscle in this lift. I mean, your lats are stabilizing it on the way down with your back. You've got chest, shoulders, and triceps pushing it up as you're driving with your legs. It's really cool, actually, how many different muscles are involved and how training these other muscle groups will wind up helping your bench press.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing with the bench. A lot of people think of it as just an upper body, you know, chest, shoulders, tricep movement. If you're doing it right and you're using really good form, you're using just about every muscle in your body. You're digging your feet in, you're pushing with your abs, you're clenching everything. Everything is tight like a rock-solid block of granite. And, you know, it's just when you do it right, the results from really locking everything in like that, it's just a world of difference to your bench.
Yeah, and I got, you know, sometimes I do get questions from people. They just say, well, why does it matter how much weight I lift? I'd rather just, you know, sculpt the muscle or do higher reps and build muscle. But, you know, I disagree with some experts on this, and I don't mind taking the opposite stance just because this is stuff I've seen from in the trenches and actual people that have done this program and trained this way and guys I've lifted with, that when you lift heavy weights and you try to get stronger, that's when you wind up getting bigger. You know, you might read in the personal training book, if you want to grow muscle or, you know, put on muscle size, you need to be doing like in the rep range of 8 to 12. You know, I think that has its place, but for that building muscle mass and just the foundation, I think these heavy exercises that use a lot of different muscle groups and doing those with low reps and heavier weight, your body has to get stronger to adapt to that, and that's when it grows muscle in order to handle the heavier weights. I mean, I think that makes perfect sense when you say it.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. It's just, I think a lot of people get kind of confused in that too, with that the rep ranges, when you're doing, you know, the higher rep ranges, like I said, do have their place, but the low rep ranges also do have their place. And for the purpose, you know, we want for building muscle and getting big and strong, you know, basically who doesn't want to do that? There's not too many people whose goal is not to get big and strong. You really do need to train with heavier weights and lower rep ranges, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And, I mean, that's why this program's it's a power building program. So it's not just low reps. It combines both some of the bodybuilding techniques. A lot of bodybuilders, they have that size already. I mean, they did their mass building program in the off season and get huge. And then they start doing the higher rep stuff and isolation things. And later on, they're just kind of sculpting the muscle that's already there. If you're looking to pack on the muscle, I think you got to train to get stronger with some of the heavier weights. But, you know, I include all kinds of different exercises. You've got your compound mass building exercises to start with, and then you've got some higher rep ranges to finish up the workout later on. That way you combine the best of both worlds. I mean, who wants to look like they're really strong and really have nothing to prove it, or they can't back it up? They just look strong, but they're all show and no go. And likewise, you know, you don't want to be super strong and just look fat. So you got to find that balance, and that's what, you know, you probably heard a lot of people say power building, but that's where you're strong like a powerlifter, but you look as good as a bodybuilder. So that's what I've always been all about. I've always wanted to be strong, but at the same time, you know, you want to look good.
Yeah, you want to look like you actually, you know, trained and not just like just some giant lump of humanity that, you know, you're strong as hell, but you don't look like you even trained at all.
Or vice versa. Someone with just like big biceps, but, you know, don't have any strength to match.
Absolutely. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is that leg drive with the bench. I know it's something a lot of people don't really know about because it's you know, you'll never find that in your ACE personal training certification. They don't ask you about leg drive on the bench press.
Right.
What's the best way to really explain that and develop that in somebody who really wants to improve their bench press? Because I noticed when I started doing that, I noticed a huge difference in my bench, and I think it's a really important tip.
Well, as far as you probably have a lot of strength already in your legs, so I'd focus on just the timing of it when you're bench pressing. So getting them set up correctly when you get on the bench, instead of lying down and having the feet just flopping down and they're just barely touching the ground, like move back on the bench some. So you're standing maybe halfway down the bench. You're standing like straddling the bench right in the middle of it. And now put your butt down there and kind of arch back underneath the bar, and now your feet are going to be really far back. I mean, it's kind of a flexibility thing, so you may have to work your feet farther and farther back, but just practice trying to get your feet underneath you. And then, you know, press on your toes. I mean, you should feel it the whole time. You're pushing with your legs. They should be tight. You're pushing into the ground. And then as you lower the weight onto your chest and you're pressing up, that exact second that you chest up, that's when you just drive you know, the heels into the ground, if you've got the heels on the ground, or just start pushing with your toes, and you'll feel your whole quads contract.
Yeah, one of the mind tricks that I like to visualize when I'm doing that is, at that point, like you said, when you start pushing up, is like I'm trying to slide myself back on the bench underneath the bar. So you kind of get that visual of really kicking yourself backwards, and I find I really get a nice push out of that.
No, that's a great tip, because we actually, it's kind of gross, but the bench gets all sweaty with all these guys that are rotating through, but we put chalk actually on our back of our t-shirts, and sometimes we even spray stick them right on the back of our backs so that the traps stick to the bench, because when you push with your legs, imagine the bench being all slippery, and you just slide straight back. I mean, that might actually happen, but, you know, so make sure you've got, like, a towel with you and wipe, make sure there's no sweat from the last person's, like, hair gel or something like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you're pressing with your legs, you could actually slide right back, right out of the bench. So that's a great way to picture it. Yeah, you explained it better than I did.
Yeah, no worries, man. I mean, if you try it with just an empty bar, you should actually be able to slide yourself backwards, you know, just to kind of get the idea of it and just give yourself a little nudge. And hope that nobody greasy has been just laying on that before you. You go squirting right out of there. Just getting a visual off of that, man, that's just hilarious.
Yeah, there's always guys that leave greasy spots on the benches.
Yeah, you know, I'm telling you, you need to invent a bench press shirt that's got Velcro on the back.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how well that would fly, but you never know. Actually, one quick question I had for you, too. Is what are your thoughts about safety while benching, and that, you know, going back to your story about yourself on the bench press, you know, do you think people should be doing these in a power rack, especially if they're training alone, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the best is to get a training partner or get someone else to do the same program as you, as long as it's not someone that's holding you back. I would rather you lift alone than be with somebody who, like, misses the workouts or makes excuses or wants to actually drag you down and get you to, like, quit early and stuff. Train by yourself if you're stuck with someone like that. But if you've got a good motivated partner and you're both picking each other up and they're a good influence for you, I mean, that's the best. Just use a regular barbell bench press is going to be the best place to do your benching. Now, if you're by yourself, it's just a schedule issue. Some guys go really early in the morning, or they train at home. They just don't have a spotter or a training partner for some reason. The power rack is your best bet, just because you can set up those safety pins, but you still get the free range of motion with the barbell. Smith machine is going to be the last resort if you don't have a power rack at your or at home or wherever you're training, and that's just because it guides the movement for you. You're not using all the stabilizer muscles. It's not the same thing. So, yeah, you're going to get stronger at the Smith machine, but then all of a sudden, if you go try this same exercise on the free weight bench press, it's a different movement. You're going to feel funny stabilizing the weight and stuff. I don't know if you've ever done this, but I didn't use dumbbells for a long time for a while when I was doing a lot of bench pressing. And then when you go back to the dumbbells, they feel all weird because you're, like, holding it with one arm trying to stabilize it. The same thing can happen with the Smith machine.
Yeah, that's actually a great tip there, because a lot of people I've seen do get on a Smith machine for bench, and I just want to discourage that completely because, like you said, it locks you in, and it can actually, you know, lock in your shoulders too, and that can cause shoulder pain just on its own. And with the dumbbells, actually, I got lucky. I wouldn't say really lucky, but my first year of training, I couldn't actually do barbell bench press because anytime I'd unrack the bar, I get a sharp shooting pain in my shoulder. So I was stuck doing just dumbbells for my whole first year of training. And I'm just a freak on that exercise right now, and my barbell bench isn't nearly as good.
Yeah, dumbbells are great too, though.
Yeah, no, they're a lot of fun. They're challenging for sure. So. You were just talking about training partners there for safety just a minute ago. As far as spotting, do you recommend people do forced reps ever with bench press, like with their spotter, or is a spotter basically just there to be there in case you need help and to do an unracks and stuff?
Well, you definitely want the spotter, like we mentioned, but whether they want to have them help you with your reps, not during your heavy sets where you're doing low reps, I wouldn't force any reps, and that's just because it's really fries your nervous system to have someone help you with the forced reps. I think that's good for the other exercises when you're doing some more isolation work or you're targeting a muscle and you're doing some higher reps, then, yeah, you can have someone, like, assist you on the last couple reps on bicep curls or something. But when you're going heavy on the bench press with lower reps, at the barbell club, we don't help each other. The person goes until they can't do it, and then if it gets stuck, you just lift the weight for them and they're done, because it just puts it's really taxing on the nervous system. And like we mentioned earlier, it's not just your muscles that need to get stronger when you're trying to lift more weight. You got to get your nervous system, your bones, your tendons and ligaments all have to catch up as well. So you don't want your muscles and everything else being able to handle it, but then your nervous system is just fried. That can be a huge, huge roadblock for people.
Yeah, I think that's honestly one of the biggest mistakes I see guys who are just starting out in training. And they go in with like a group of two or three other people, and, you know, they're right on the bench, and every single set they're doing forced reps, and, you know, it's all you, man. It's like, no.
Yeah, it's like an ego. That's an ego thing, and then that guy's like curling the weight for them, doing like a good morning bicep curl.
Mm-hmm. When you're, you know, benching 225 and you got somebody on either side of the bar basically lifting the weight for you, then, you know, you're probably not doing all that on your own. Because basically the purpose of your spotter is not to lift the weight for you. It's to be there in case you need help getting it off. And,
right.
You know.
So yeah, just for safety and motivation, not to do it for you.
Yeah, and not to drip sweat on your face.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, it does. Let's see. Now, here's a question for you. And I think our listeners will be really interested in this one. Is how fast, legitimately, do you think a person can really increase bench press? Like, what's the fastest results you've ever seen with people using your program?
Well, you know, Nick, it varies on a person and how long they've been training. I mean, you take someone brand new that's never lifted, mm-hmm. they're going to make humongous gains. You take someone that's only been training a few years, it's going to increase a lot faster than someone who's already hit like a 400-pound bench press and they're trying to get to 450. The stronger you get, typically the slower the results come. But there have been, probably since I started this program, I think about 10,300-something people have ordered and used this program. And the average result is 50 pounds during the 10-week program. So that's a typical result, but you know, one of the biggest success stories I had was this guy, Sergi, from Canada. And he got up to a 345-pound bench, and he added 100 pounds. So he started at 245 pounds. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, a lot of this is technique. Some of the things we went over, and you watch the fundamentals online DVD, and you get the technique down, and you use some of the tips from the book and the program. I really think in 1 to 2 weeks, you can add 25 pounds at least to your bench. I get emails all the time, people thanking me, just saying, you know, I used your tips and techniques. I changed things around, and I'm already up 20, 25 pounds since I made these changes. And that's without changing their training program. That's just mm-hmm. technique. So then imagine now you're following a program. You're sticking to something. You've got a guide to follow along. You know, you've got a goal in mind. People don't even realize how important goals are. I mean, it's just like sailing a ship. If you're out at sea and you're just saying, I want to go north, and you just start sailing out and you don't even know where you're going, you're going to zigzag all over the place, and maybe someday you'll get somewhere close to where you were trying to go. It's not the same thing as having an exact goal in a specified period of time. We're talking 50 pounds on your bench in 10 weeks. That's going to be your goal. Mm-hmm. So you've got that every single week. You're giving your weights to lift, and you just keep hitting them week after week. They're just small incremental gains every single week, but it adds up.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of this program. This is like you said, more than 10,000 people have used it. That seems pretty proven stuff to me. This is a pretty solid roadmap, and you know exactly how people's bodies react to this kind of thing, and you can pretty well gauge if you follow this program, you're going to get this kind of results. And honestly, it's just you really have to know what you're doing and have that goal. Like you said with the reps, you know, not too long ago, you say you're going to get 6 reps. Mentally, you have that number, and you get those 6 reps, whereas you might not have before. It's the same thing with a major goal like increasing your bench by 50. You have that goal present in your mind. You're going to take the steps necessary to get there when you have that specific goal in your mind. So it's really good to have that kind of idea of how much you want to shoot for.
Yeah, just like fat loss, you can't just say, I'm going to go and try to lose 20 pounds of fat and never take your body fat percentages and not, you know, count your grams in your food and stuff like that. So this is just more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on a fat life cycle right now, so I can verify that.
Getting ready for Mexico, huh?
Yep. I lean out a little bit. What was I going to say? What assistance exercises play a big role in the bench press. You know, it's not just the press part of it. What kind of assistance exercises do you recommend for benching? And do those depend a lot on where you're weakest in the range of motion, or are they just kind of similar for everybody?
I mean, it can, but like we talked about earlier, the bench press involves so many different muscles in your body that typically when you think of assistant exercises, you think, oh, what other bench press type exercises? But I'm going to say working other muscle groups hard is going to be what really helps your bench press the most. And not everybody has access to all this fancy equipment. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with people that use chains and they have bands and board work and lots of training partners and all this fancy equipment. I designed this program so that most people could use it. People can do it at home. All you pretty much need is a barbell, dumbbells, and a bench, and you pretty much got everything you need. So I don't have all kinds of crazy equipment involved. But as far as my favorite assistance exercises, I'm going to say close grip bench press, just working those triceps, doing some heavy tricep work, you know, lats and rows, overhead shoulder pressing, those other exercises, doing those heavy, the other compound exercises, those are all going to carry over and help your bench press. Other than that, it's just a matter of rotating. You don't want to just bench press every single week. Mm-hmm. You want to mix that up. You know, do some incline some weeks, some decline some weeks. You don't want to do us every single week go do the exact same thing. I think that's a principle most people probably have down, but we're just creatures of habit. I know when I'm not following a program, I go to the gym without a plan. I don't know why, but you wind up like repeating the same workout each time you go.
Yep.
So I definitely designed it this way to mix things up so you're not doing the same thing every week.
Excellent, yeah. And since you mentioned the incline and decline stuff, how do you incorporate that into the training? I mean, I see a lot of people, when they ask me questions, like they ask me if their program is going to be effective, they start with flat bench, then they go to incline bench, then they do decline bench, and they do like everything all at once. Is it better to kind of rotate through, or is it better to do it that way?
I think that's too much in one workout. I would mix those up on different weeks. Like mm-hmm. instead of doing all three of those in one workout, I'm sure you're familiar with Louis Simmons from Westside Barbell. He's been kind of a pioneer of strength training in the United States. He brought over and popularized a lot of great strength training information from Russia. And what he calls it, the conjugate method, is rotating max effort exercises. So in this case, we take the bench press, and instead of those are all heavy bench pressing movements, just at different angles. Instead of doing all those three in the same workout, you can move those around. So each week you're bench pressing, but you're doing a different kind of bench press mm-hmm. each week. So maybe one week you do flat, the next week you do decline, back to flat, then next week is incline. So you don't want to do everything in one workout. It's just too much.
Yeah, and then, of course, you want to add in all the force reps on every single set.
Right. So you overtrain.
For some fun.
Here's the formula to make your bench press go down. You bench press Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You do flat, incline, and decline, and add 3/4 reps to every single set.
Yeah, and you'll be benching negative in no time. Yeah, no, you'd be surprised at how often. I mean, you probably get that kind of question all the time, too.
Hey, I said it. I did it myself when I was in high school listening to waves.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, here's a question for you that I was really curious about. Do you ever use partial training when you're doing bench press for your lifting?
Yeah. I mean, I've read some of your articles, and I'm a big fan of your powerful training secrets and stuff. Like you do the partial squats and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's great for building the tendon and ligament strength. It also works the different weak areas of the bench. So I use them a little different than you in this program. Mm-hmm. I have what's called half reps, which are during the deload week. So instead of lifting heavy every single week during the program, you need to back off every few weeks. And there's a couple weeks where you work half reps, and that's where you do it from your chest halfway up, and you just try to work on that point. If you're weak off the chest, that helps you get explosive off there. And then you've got the upper half reps where you come down halfway and then push up, mm-hmm. and that helps you with the lockout. But I do that with a little bit lighter weight during the deload. Mm-hmm. But as far as overloading, the muscles and really building up the bone density and your nervous system getting used to the heavier weights, instead of you doing the partial training, what I have is heavy negatives in the program. Mm-hmm. You do spotters to perform that, but that's where you put on maybe 50 pounds more than what your one rep max is, and your job is to just stabilize that weight nice and slow as you can, control it all the way down. And it's basically a negative rep. and then you don't even push it yourself. You have all your spotters pull it off for you, and you just do as many of those as you can.
Yeah, negative training is excellent stuff. And
yeah, I mean, it gets you so sore.
Yeah.
Soreness doesn't necessarily mean you're getting stronger, but it makes you feel like you're working hard.
Yeah, and that's really the important thing after all. Is just actually, what I found a lot of people with their negative training is where they really kind of mess up is that they think of it as just lowering the weight, whereas actually because it's more than your one rep max, instead of just lowering the weight, you actually want to fight it all the way down. You want to actually push aggressively against that weight as the weight kind of forces itself down on you. And,
yeah, I mean, take like 6 to 8 seconds to get it all the way down or more if you can. The whole set might only be 2 or 3 reps.
Oh, yeah, and that kind of training, the real negative training like you're talking about there, that's just really effective stuff. And I think a lot of people don't quite get that with negative training is they put a lot of weight on and they just drop the weight and they don't fight it all the way down. And that's, you know, to really get the results from the negative stuff, you really need to fight it and push against it all the way down.
Yeah, good point.
Do you ever find you use a lot of dumbbells when you're doing bench training? Like instead of if you need a break from the barbells, do you do heavy dumbbell stuff?
Not during this program, but they are part of the program, kind of like how that guy said he did flat, incline, decline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can move on to some dumbbells after you're done benching. There's definitely dumbbell exercises in the program. So I do like dumbbells, but as far as replacing flat bench pressing, we don't do that in this program. But that is part of the deload routine. That's
mm-hmm.
a bonus that comes with the program. And as you're aware, you can't train progressive overload, really, really heavy training nonstop without giving your body a rest between programs. So what this deload routine does is once you get through the program for 10 weeks, you get your bench max up. Now, depending how you feel, you take 2 to 4 weeks, and you have a totally different routine. And this routine uses almost all dumbbells, and it just refreshes your body and gets you ready to start another heavy, high-intensity training program again. So I'm a big fan of using dumbbells for assistance exercises and during deload time, but they're not used to actually be your prime movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to keep that specificity with the barbell training for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that deload stuff is really critical, and I think that's a lot of times when really people start seeing bad results is when they don't deload, when they just keep on trying to push, and they hit a plateau, and you know, what's their response to the plateau is they push harder, and that basically sets them back even further. And that, you know, you really need to back off. And like Mike said, you need to deload and just kind of back off on everything and let your body recover and recuperate. And it's really effective stuff. And I'm glad it's built right into the program. So it basically forces you to deload. And it's definitely a good addition to the program. Supplements. That's always an interesting question. Do you have any supplements that you particularly do recommend, don't recommend? You know, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's this one supplement you take, and it puts 80 pounds on your bench. No, I'm just kidding. Here's the thing about supplements. I'm not a huge fan of them. I don't think they're going to do miracles for you. I think they're what the name is, supplements. They're going to just help you a little bit when you've got everything else in order. So let's say you've got your diet down, you've got your training down, your stress is down, you're getting your rest, everything's in line. Now you can add in a few proven supplements that are just going to give you maybe a 10% boost. But it's not like you're just going to find some magic supplement or read one of these ads in the magazines, go buy it, and eat like crap and barely work out or overtrain, and it's going to do miracles for you. So I just want to make that clear with people, not to get fooled by all the supplement ads. There's only a few proven supplements that I think actually work, and get everything else in line first and then just use the supplements as an extra little boost. So with that little disclaimer out there, the supplements that I actually like, I do take protein. I want to make sure you get enough protein just to build the muscle and to repair it, because you actually get stronger and you grow when you're resting, not while you're lifting. Hopefully most of us know that by now. I'm a big fan of Cre-alkaline instead of creatine. And my favorite brand, it's called Hypergain by AS Research, and that's got Cre-alkaline in it. I just find less side effects from people that have used it. So creatine's safe. You know, it's a great supplement, but some people have a little bit of bloating or water weight or stomach issues from it. Not many people, but some people do. I haven't barely heard any of that from people taking Cre-alkaline, so I'm a big fan of that. You don't have to load it or anything like that either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've used that brand before. It's definitely good stuff.
Yeah, I personally like taking joint complexes too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're lifting heavy weights for several weeks in a row, you just can get little nagging aches, I guess they're called, like little tendonitis things. So personally, I take like shark cartilage and I'm not sure if I'm saying it right. Is it chondroitin? Is that how you say it?
Yep.
Yeah, glucosamine and then the MSM. So if you find a supplement, it's hard to find one that has all of that in it.
Yeah.
I'm actually still looking for one that has everything. You usually have to buy shark cartilage separately.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Beverly Nutrition makes a good one. That's the one I'm taking. It's got the glucosamine,
okay,
which is basically the active ingredient in shark cartilage, and then it's got the MSM and the chondroitin in there. And
cool.
I get really good results with that. I'm right there with you on the joint stuff. I take some every day, and it makes a big difference. And especially as you get older, you really need that stuff to make it. If your body doesn't have the raw materials to repair, then it's not going to be able to fully repair and recover. It's going to hold you back in not only your bench but in all your training too. So that's a great call on that, absolutely.
Yeah, and then, you know, just multivitamins too, that always helps.
Mm-hmm.
And I take some digestive enzymes as well, just to help digesting food and make sure I'm absorbing all the nutrients. But, you know, some glutamine once in a while, throw that in the protein shakes just for recovery. It's just an amino acid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. You know, I used to take supplements like different fat burners to get you usually just for the energy before workouts, but I've moved away from that. I'm trying to just clean up my act, and you just wind up draining your body. You wind up just overstimulating your adrenal glands, and then you stop taking the stimulants, and all of a sudden you don't have the energy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You just wind up getting in this little cycle going on. So I'm trying to get away from all that, not relying on any energy drinks or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. Most of my supplementation is like vitamins, minerals, protein. You know, you stick with the basics and fish oil and stuff like that. And,
yeah.
You know, I'll try some of that other, you know, fancy magazine crap every once in a while, and I've never been happy with just about anything I've tried. You know, I see all these great results that people have gotten with it, and it's like, yeah, I don't see it. So it's.
Yeah, and then you're looking at the ads, and you got the same guy in like six different advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
For six different supplements, saying how each one was responsible for his gains.
Yeah.
Like, which one is it?
Yeah, exactly. Vitamin S.
Right.
Yeah.
So vitamin S. Vitamin steroids, is that the one?
That's exactly the one, yeah. Or vitamin A, you know, vitamin anabolic. Yeah. It's unfortunately, you see a lot of that in the magazines, and it's just, you know, supplements aren't really responsible for the way these guys look. And, you know, if you've been around, once you kind of get the idea and you've been around and you've spent thousands of dollars on useless supplements, you'll figure that out for yourself. But if you want to save yourself some money, then listen to us.
Right. And I mean, FDA doesn't even regulate the supplements. You don't even know what's in it.
Yeah.
Half the time they say proprietary blend, meaning they're not going to tell you the ingredients. Why are you going to take something? You don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
There's no lab results or anything telling you even what's in it. It could be just flour. Who knows what the heck's in some of this stuff. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, as I've gotten a little older, I'm more conscious of my health than when I was younger. When I was younger, all I wanted to do was get big and strong and was trying all kinds of different supplements, wasting a lot of money.
Yep. And the ironic thing is you will get bigger and stronger when you get your training and your eating dialed in. So
exactly.
Focus on that. Take the advice from us old guys here. Old guys in our mid-30s here, yeah. We talked about maxing out earlier. How often would you recommend somebody does a max out to test their one rep max?
I mean, it's fun to max out, and guys love doing it, but doing it too often is going to be counterproductive. I remember being in high school and we'd max out almost like once a week.
Yeah.
It'd always be like around the same thing, or you'd go up 5 pounds or something like that. And I don't know. I mean, that's not good for you. I would say every couple months, kind of like how this program's set up, you go 10 weeks of training, and then week 11, that's when you max out. Then you take your deload, and then you can start the program. And so typically, you know, 2 months, then you can max out. But even longer than that is fine to actually do a true one rep max.
Yeah, it's pretty demanding when you do those for real.
Yeah, that's different than, I mean, if you're doing a whole workout and your last set ends with something that's maybe one or two reps, that's not a one rep max, just
mm-hmm.
because a set is for one or two reps, because you had all those working sets before it. If you don't mind, I'd like to just throw in one more mistake, which is huge for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see people, this is a tip actually, if you are going to max out pretty soon, people just pre-fatigue themselves with their warm-up. They do so many warm-up sets I don't know how they have any strength left when they're actually say, okay, now I'm going to put the weight on that I want to try. Like if I could give you the warm-up routine, I know you're going to lift more weight because I've seen people that, you know, they do the bar, then they do 10 reps with 135, then they do like 8 reps with 185, like another 8 reps with 225, another 8 reps with like 255, then they go for their max, and I'm just, mm-hmm. just like, wow, you know, that's, you're not supposed to do like working sets building up to your max. Stay with warm-ups of 3 reps, but even if it's a weight you could do like 10 times, just do it 3 times, that's it. You know, take a break. Take long breaks. You don't have to rush like 60 seconds and hop back down on the bench either. Like, mm-hmm. make sure you're recovered. Get a drink. Take time with this stuff. It's not like a sprint. And then make sure you're warmed up, but warm up with lower reps and then take your time between, and you'll lift a lot more when you do max out. Don't totally exhaust all your muscles right before you're about to max out.
Yeah, I think one of the mindset mistakes people make with that is that when they're doing just the 1 or 2 rep sets, it doesn't feel like a workout. So they don't feel like they're doing anything. So they feel like they have to do all these other sets and reps because they've not really had the experience of doing that true 1 rep max where you're basically targeting your whole leading up to just that 1 rep. So it doesn't feel, to them, I don't think it feels like they're doing a true workout if they just go for 1 rep. So
yeah,
it can be, yeah. So I think that's part of the, when I first started training, I think that's one of the mistakes that I would make. Is I would overdo the warm-up. And when you start lifting more in the lower rep range, you'll get more comfortable with handling heavy weights and you won't feel like you need that much. So there's another bonus for the lower rep ranges too.
And it's crazy. As you get stronger and you're handling more weight, the workouts start feeling a lot harder the more weight you're handling. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes we'll do at the gym like 8 sets of 2 or 3 reps. Mm-hmm. And you're actually getting tired. I mean, you do your few reps, and those reps take some time, and you're just fighting and struggling for every rep, and afterwards you actually are huffing and puffing a little bit after a
yep.
set with only 2 or 3 reps. It's really strange. It's like you're not supposed to get exhausted from doing like 2 or 3 reps.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. I get the same thing when I really hit the heavy weight and the low reps. It's kind of a nice difference, nice change too. And mentally, I really enjoy training the heavy stuff, so I'm right there with you. Here's a question for you about the actual critical bench program itself. This is not just a bench specialization program, is it? This actually hits all your other body parts and gives you kind of a full routine to incorporate everything in with bench kind of as the focus. But, you know, what's your rationale basically behind that?
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, it's power building. So it's getting strong like a power lifter and looking as good as a bodybuilder. And because the bench press uses so many muscles, it can't just be a bench specialization where you just bench. It's a full body workout. So it's 4-day split or a 5-day split. You have your choice and you're in the gym for about an hour for each workout. And it's full body. You're working all your different muscle groups, but it is split up different muscle groups on different days. And it's set up to optimize your bench press. And my whole reasoning for that is as your bench press goes up, which uses all these different muscle groups, that's how you put on the most muscle too, by getting stronger in the compound movements that use the most muscle groups. So that's why it's set up that way. And no, it's not just about bench pressing. It's about overall getting stronger and putting muscle size through a full body workout.
Excellent. Yeah. So yeah, if you're thinking this is just only bench press, then it's not just bench press. This is basically a holistic kind of approach with a focus towards bench press, but builds everything. And that's
exactly.
one of the nice things about this program. One of the questions actually I got in, I think, is a really good one that I want to hear your answer on, is would you apply this same kind of methodology for females?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge misconception with women. They think that if they lift heavier weights or struggle to do more weight or push themselves, that they're going to blow up and grow giant muscles. They just don't have the genetics and the hormone to get humongous. And unfortunately, you've got some pro female bodybuilders that abuse drugs that really scare a lot of women, saying, I don't want to look like that. Well, I promise you're not going to wind up looking like that. A lot of the women that look really feminine with, you know, like the figure physique models and ones like that, a lot of them do, you know, really push themselves and lift heavier weights and actually struggle for those reps. If you just kind of go into the gym and you're doing like 15 to 20 reps that are easy for you, you're not challenging yourself. you know, the same point. Most of us know that the more muscle you have on your body, the more efficient you're going to be, and the more lean muscle mass you have, the more fat you burn, just more calories you burn in everything you do in life. So I think strength training and lifting heavier for women, it's a big misconception. I think this would be a fine program for women to do too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And
they're just not as, you know, they're not as excited about the bench press as guys are. You know, guys, we get tested in it for different sports. People are talking about it. It seems like there's like a bench challenge going on every Monday night at the gym. So I think it's more of an ego thing for guys. But, yeah, definitely I wouldn't design a program any differently for a woman.
Yeah, I mean, when I was back in college taking physiology classes, they said, you know, female muscle, exactly the same as male muscle. The only difference is the hormones. You know, it's, you know, and when you get the female bodybuilders who are artificially injecting the hormones, that's when you get the development of muscle mass that puts a lot of women off. And, you know,
right.
Women just don't generally have that naturally. And, you know, there are a few genetic exceptions, of course, to everything. But, you know, women can train exactly like men train. And you don't have to separate yourself. And, you know, there is nothing wrong with being a strong woman. And, you know, my wife would tell you the same thing. She's proud of how much she can lift. And, she wants to get stronger all the time.
Yeah, is she coming to Mexico, by the way?
She is, actually, yep.
Cool, looking forward to meeting her.
Yeah. Here's a question from Bill from Cincinnati. Actually, this is a good question, too. We sort of addressed this. How can I increase my bench weight without hurting my shoulders?
Yeah, we talked about bringing your elbows in. Instead of flaring those out at a 90-degree angle, mm-hmm. Grip the bar in the exact same place, but before you start the lift, rotate your elbows in, and now keep them close to your side as you lower the weight. If you check this email, I think that Nick sent out with today's login info for the call, I think there was a link to that free report that he had too, which shows you some pictures of it if it's hard to picture.
Yeah, no, that should be in that free report. It's right at the bottom of the email if you still got that in front of you.
I mean, I really think that's probably the reason that your shoulders are hurting, but if that's not the reason, you might want to add in some rotator cuff exercises at the end of your workouts. You could do that at the end of a chest workout or a shoulder workout. Don't do them first because they're tiny little muscles, and you can wind up pre-fatiguing them before you do heavier weights. You don't want to wind up injuring yourself, so do them at the end of the workout. You can do external and internal rotations to build up those rotator cuffs if you do have any little minor injuries in there. That should help too.
Yeah, and those rotator cuffs muscles, basically for someone who's not familiar with the area, it's these little, in your shoulder is a ball and socket joint, and it's pretty free-floating, so you have to have a lot of muscular and connective tissue in there to keep that, you know, your arm socket together. And these little rotator cuff muscles stabilize that joint. So if your rotator cuff muscles are weak, that is going to shift around a lot and could lead to shoulder injury and shoulder pain and even reduced weight in your bench press. And you know, that's a key point right there that Mike said.
Yeah. Stretching, too. I mean, I don't know if the person that asked this question does a lot of bench pressing, but, you know, you want to stretch out those pecs, do some foam rolling and try to loosen up the tissue and scar tissue and stuff. Make sure you're training the antagonistic muscle, too. A lot of guys just focus on what they can see in the mirror, but you got to work your back, too, to work the opposite muscles to keep things even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's actually another excellent point right there with the back. I've seen a lot of guys walking in with kind of the hunched over shoulders from working the mirror muscles, biceps, you know, chest, and it just kind of pulls and pulls and pulls forward all the time. But what they don't realize is that by thickening up your back and working your back, you actually can improve your bench. What kind of exercises would you recommend for back and for improving your back in relation to bench press too?
Well, I like the compound things. I like barbell rows and lat pull downs. Those are great back exercises to start with. Also for the shoulders, people skip the rear deltoids a lot just because they're smaller muscles and you wind up doing like 15-pound dumbbells and stuff, and it's kind of embarrassing. But working your rear deltoid, that's going to help even out some of that too. I think that might help with the shoulder pain too. That's a muscle a lot of guys neglect.
Yeah, no, the rotator cuff, it's not a very common muscle, and the rear delts especially, you know, have been very neglected because, like you said, you're not going to be doing hundreds and hundreds of pounds on it. So you'll look like you're flailing around with these little light dumbbells, but when you're doing them right, it can make a big impact on a lot of things, especially in the upper body training.
Yeah.
I just had a question for you that just flew right out of my head.
Yeah, sure.
like flew right out like I can't remember it.
Flew like you can't remember the question.
Flew like, yeah, fly away, it's gone. But I'll probably think of it here in a second. I do have a question from Joe here from Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, regarding diet. He's asking, what's your current take on diet? I think in relation to improving, like, overall body comp and bench pressing, you know, what's the best kind of diet to follow for this?
I mean, there's so many different kinds of diets. I'm actually messing around with the metabolic surge diet right now. Mm-hmm. The main thing you want to remember when training for strength and for power, you can't be giving yourself a calorie deficit. You can't be starving yourself or doing any kind of fasting or anything like that. I'm not on a strict diet when I do this program. My goal is muscle building and strength. I will feed myself, and I just work out really hard. I don't wind up calorie counting. There are some meal plan suggestions and things. It's going to be a lot of protein, some fats, and some carbs. You need the carbs for the energy. You need the fats to transport the vitamins and cushion your joints and things. But at the same time, I've said, you know, I want to look good at the same time. So I'm all about lean muscle building. For an exact kind of diet, you know, lean proteins, some of the good fats, and then, I mean, you can eat as much vegetables and things as you want. But I don't go on a strict diet while I'm on this program because I'm focusing on the strength and building of the muscle. So if anything, you should be feeding yourself extra meals or taking extra protein shakes, making sure you're getting enough food, because that's one of the reasons people wind up feeling overtrained or not hitting their weights that they want to be hitting is just because they're not eating enough foods. And if you're going to be strict on a diet, at least make sure you're eating enough the day before your heavy bench press workout and the day of your bench press workout. Make those your cheat days and then get a lot more strict on the other days. That would be my recommendation. But, yeah, you know, I've tried a lot of different diets, and, you know, it's tough to put somebody on something that everybody's different. I'm not one of those people that thinks this is the diet, everybody do it. I think everyone's metabolisms and bodies are unique, and I think different people respond differently to things. So hopefully you've experimented with some different kinds of diets that work for you, and you can incorporate what you like doing. But I would say definitely make sure you're getting enough protein and eating enough before your heavy workouts.
Yeah, absolutely. And think of it this way, too. The fatter you get, the shorter your range of motion.
Yeah, that's a funny joke.
That's probably not, like, good advice or anything, so don't actually follow that. But it is true. Technically, I've seen the guys who really are amazing, you know, 800-plus pounder bench pressers, and these guys have, like, stubby little Tyrannosaurus Rex arms that are, like, you know, a foot and a half long, and, you know, they have these giant Buddha bellies, so their range of motion is, like, my partial lockout range of motion.
No, that's true, but at the same time, we give people hope, too, because I'm 6 feet tall and have really long arms, so mm-hmm. with technique changes and things, you can increase a lot what you're doing, too. But, yeah, genetically, if you've got short arms and things, there are leverage advantages, like you said.
Yeah, no, that's good to know, too, with your long arms, too, because if somebody with longer arms can develop a 450 bench press, you know, there's hope for everybody. Because when you have a longer leverage like that, it just makes it that much harder to really develop a big bench. And the people who have the little short arms, you know, they pay for it on the deadlift, you know, because
right.
they have to that much more range of motion. But when it comes to bench, you know, it's different for different people, like you said, with genetics and how they're built and how they develop, basically. Now, here's a quick question for you regarding the actual program. What extra bonuses do people get when they pick up the Critical Bench 2.0 program? Like, what else comes with the program here, just in addition to the book?
Yeah, well, the reason I did update things is, like we mentioned before, it's the 10-year anniversary of the website and of the program, so I'm really excited about that, and I kind of wanted to do something to, you know, reward people and celebrate with people that have been supporting me over all these years and all the people that have used the program. But the way it worked in the past was I have these training logs and the workout charts completely figured out with all the numbers for you. So let's say your starting max right now, you can do 225 pounds for one rep. You would buy the 225-pound program, and it would tell you exactly what you're benching each week with the numbers and everything calculated for you. And for the last 10 years, one program with one max sold for $39.99. So what I did to celebrate the 10-year anniversary now is I'm giving all 80 training charts. They go in 5-pound increments. They go from a starting max of 100 pounds, I think, all the way up to a starting max of 500 pounds. So, and that gives you the bench maxes and I mean the bench weights to use every single week, plus the whole rest of the program. So that's 80 charts that used to sell for $39.99 each. And I've had lots of people go through it once. They put 50 pounds on their bench, and they were just going buy another one. And I felt bad. I'm like, you can do the math. Just do the percentages. And they're like, oh, it's confusing. I don't want to do it. I'd rather buy another one. So to celebrate, I'm giving all 80 charts for the price of one pretty much. And
that's awesome, yeah.
That's really cool. That's one thing I'm doing. Then you get the manual. And then, you know, a lot of us like reading, like me and you, the theory and the organization and why it's set up the way it is. For me, things work better when I understand why I'm doing it. But at the same time, some people just want done for you. Just give me the workouts. I'm going to rush. You're the expert. Let me just follow it. So you've got the manual that teaches you all the technique and all the different tips and tactics and stuff like that. If you're more of a visual person, it comes with the online DVD, and that's about an hour long. You've got pro-level powerlifter Clint Smith. You've got a world record contender AJ Roberts from Westside Barbell, myself, and we go over all the different techniques and setups so that you can start practicing that and really visualize what's explained in the book. Those are the main components of the program. But another really cool thing you get is the critical deload program, which I mentioned earlier. And you know how I said there's 80 training charts? So let's say you add 50 pounds to your max in the 10 weeks. Now, you don't want to jump right to the next chart. You want to go into this deload routine, and you follow that for 2 to 4 weeks. Then you can start the next program right away. So if you got your bench up to 275, now you do the deload routine for 4 weeks, then you can start the 275 max chart next. So you can keep going and going with this and keep getting results.
Excellent, yeah. Now, do you find that if people do the program, like you said, two times in a row, could they potentially put on 50 and then another 50?
I mean, it's happened if you do the deload, but, I mean, it wouldn't be as much if you do two immediately. If you're a complete beginner, I could see that happening.
Yeah, but with the deload, there's potential that somebody could put on another 30 to 40 to 50 even in a second
round.
That's
what I'm thinking,
yeah.
Second round, immediately maybe 30, or maybe you'd want to do a different program for a little longer before you come back to it. But, yeah, there's definitely potential to do that.
Excellent.
But another reason things are updated, it is the same workout type program, but I updated the manual like crazy just because since I originally wrote it, I don't know if you've seen all the interviews I've done on the website, but I've been fortunate enough just for having a pretty big website that a lot of people have heard of. I got lucky and Google just found my website and liked it because there was so much information on there and more people started finding out about it. And I started just landing interviews with all these awesome like bodybuilders and powerlifters and strength athletes. And to me, that's just great. I love picking their brains and they love the exposure. And I just learned so much over the last 10 years on the site. There's hundreds of interviews. And I took the best of the best, ones with, like, Dave Draper and, you know, MMA fighters and Ed Cohn, all these guys, and put them together into a book that's a bonus. It's called Critical Conversations with Elite Iron Warriors. And that's where I learned a lot of my tactics from, and I'm sure people are going to pick up all kinds of tips, things that I missed that are in there. But that's definitely one of the reasons I updated the program as well.
Nice.
Another reason I personally started competing when I first wrote this, I was competing myself. I've met with a lot of powerlifting coaches. I'm on a powerlifting team now, and, you know, I'm getting tips from guys that are stronger than me. So, you know, I go to a normal gym, go to a Gold's gym, and I'm probably going to be, like, the best bench presser in the gym. But I show up at practice, and I'm just another guy at the gym. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
So I'm humbled, and I go in there, and I'm learning from other people, and I'm just passing along. A lot of people don't have access to the same information. So I've been blessed just to learn from different coaches and things.
Yeah,
that's another reason I updated it.
That's awesome, man. And this is a great way to pass on all that stuff that you've pulled from other people and just kind of, you know, concentrate it into one package. And, you know, if you're interested in increasing your bench and your overall body and strength, this is just a lot of great info in here. And having
plus, it's been not to cut you off, it's been collaborative, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, from having the program out for so long, people send in suggestions and tips and feedback of how it's working for them. So I've had so much feedback that I've been able to change things and add things to the program as well. So that's been awesome. And one of the major things that came in was just people had injuries or they didn't have access to certain equipment. So I built a humongous exercise database, and I put it all into this book called The Critical Exercise Guide that I'm giving away as a bonus. So if you want to swap out an exercise, you just click the muscle group, and inside the book you've got pictures and definitions of different exercises you can do instead. It's another way to change the program around just to give yourself some variety as well.
Yeah,
that's a really cool bonus.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, it's because not everybody can do everything, and not everybody benefits equally from each exercise too. So,
right.
To be able to switch stuff around like that's perfect. Wow, 8:10, and time flies. got some great info here. What's that?
Yeah, we've been talking for a while.
I know. Yeah, got a ton of great info here, and I think people are going to really be itching to go test this stuff out here tomorrow. If you're listening in here, we just have been talking to Mike Westerdahl, Critical Bench. We're going to wrap this up here tonight since I don't want to take up all of Mike's evening here. But, Mike, I really appreciate you basically opening this all up here and giving away some of your best stuff here and really educating everybody about how to properly bench. I mean, I even learned some good stuff from here tonight, and I've been training for 20 years. So it's there's a lot of good stuff here. And the Critical Bench program itself, if you're online listening to the webcast, you can just click on that link over on the left there and go grab a copy right now. I'm going to be posting this recording too, if you want to actually save it and listen to it again later and, you know, test some of these things out and then go back and pick up this program, because it's excellent stuff, and it's on sale right now for Mike's 10-year anniversary of this program. And Mike, thanks again for coming on here, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I love talking about this stuff.
Cool. And we'll talk to you soon, and see you soon.
All right, see you later, Nick. Bye.
All righty.